Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 9, 2021. Sudanese Prime Minister appoints opposition and former rebels into his new cabinet.
This cabinet came as a result of a political consensus after a long period of discussions that took months, as we were concerned about how to preserve this country from collapse.
And the health center is threatening to sue a Juba-based radio station for defamation.
MedBlue Laboratory does not issue fake results nor mismatch names on certificates. We challenge a radio to provide evidence of their false claims or apologize for publishing deforming information about MedBlue.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok has appointed a new cabinet, including members of the opposition and armed groups that signed the Sudan Comprehensive Peace Agreement in October last year. The new 25-member cabinet, including four women, is expected to be sworn in this week. Mariam Sadiq Al-Mahdi is the new Sudan's foreign minister. Hamdok describes the new cabinet as inclusive. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
In a nationally televised announcement, Prime Minister Hamdok named 20 new ministers, including Darfur rebel leader Jibril Ibrahim, as finance minister. The new foreign affairs minister will be Mariam As-Sadiq Al-Mahdi, the leader of the Popular Umma Party and daughter of former prime minister. Khalid Umar from the Sudanese Congress Party was named minister for cabinet affairs. Hamdok also maintained six members of his previous cabinet: Justice Minister Nasruddin Abdulbari, Water Resources and Irrigation Minister Yasser Abbas, Religious Affairs Minister Nasruddin Mufarrah, Defense Minister Yasin Ibrahim, Interior Minister Izzedine Sheikh, and Higher Education Minister Professor Intisar Sigairun. A minister for general education is yet to be appointed due to what Hamdok described as further consultations, but said the position will be filled soon. Hamdok called new cabinet inclusive, saying it represents all parties who took part in the Juba peace deal.
This cabinet came as a result of a political consensus after a long period of discussions that took months, as we were concerned about how to preserve this country from collapse. As you have been observing in our region, there are a lot of conflicts and challenges. Many countries have collapsed within the past few years, and as Sudanese, we should not follow their footsteps in our country.
Hamdok says over the past 1.5 years, his government was able to reform Sudanese laws and restore freedom across the country. He noted the transitional government signed a peace deal with the armed opposition groups and made it possible to remove Sudan from the U.S. list of countries sponsoring terrorism. Journalist and political analyst Abdul Hamid Awad, who works for the Qatar-based Arabic newspaper Al Arab Al Jadid, says despite those achievements, the new government faces many obstacles as the country struggles to repair its economy.
There is no doubt that the new government is going to face a lot of economic, security, and social complications. And they need to face these challenges with resilience and hard work, which requires huge financial support from the international community, beside building up a true national unity of our people.
Howard says he believes restoring the country's economy and improving people's livelihood, security and welfare should be at the top of the new government's agenda. He says citizens have yet to see the fruits of the revolution.
Prices of basic commodities such as vegetables, fruits, milk, sugar, and meat are now very high in Sudanese markets. This is a big problem. There are also serious shortages in bread and fuel. The new government needs to focus on these issues.
Khartoum resident Amira Saleh welcomes the new cabinet and expects Sudan's economy to improve under the new leadership.
We have a lot of national resources in Sudan, and if they are utilized in a good way, it will increase our local production and our economic will improve. Let them also encourage foreign investors to come and invest in our resources, and that way our local currency will get strong.
Shortly after Hamdok's announcement, Sudan Sovereign Council, headed by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, held an extraordinary session and endorsed the newly appointed ministers. The newly appointed ministers are expected to be sworn in tomorrow afternoon. During Hamdok's announcement, demonstrators took to the streets in many states across Sudan, demanding better living conditions. Local authorities in Alubay town of North Kordofan and Al-Fashir of North Darfur have shut down schools and imposed curfews in the two areas. Other protests were reported today in Port Sudan and Niala town of South Darfur against higher prices and poor living conditions. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The leader of a former Darfur rebel group, Justice and Equality Movement, Jibril Ibrahim, is Sudan's new finance minister. Hamjad Farid is the assistant chief of staff to Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok. He explains the new changes to my colleague, James Batty.
Today, the prime minister announced his second cabinet after the glorious revolution of December 2018. And it's composed of several members who were suggested or proposed by the Forces of Freedom and Change and the partners in Juba Peace Accord. And they represent the soul of the Sudanese political movement. This cabinet will be facing a lot of challenges, including the economic situation and the long heritage of 30 years of corruption and mismanagement during the NCP Islamist regime. The prime minister have selected them out of list of candidates that presented to him in order to ensure homogeneous implementation of the plan to rescue the country during the coming years from that heritage, reaching to a point of complete democratization of the country and implementation of a just and long-lasting peace in the country.
The appointment from the Justice and Equality Movement, what is behind that?
Justice and Equity Movement is a movement that fought against the previous regime with all of its injustice and racial discrimination in the country. And it's a movement that it's part of the revolutionary forces in the country and part of Juba Peace Accord. Justice and Equity Movement proposed names were selected within the mandate to bring the country to the previous era of racial discrimination and all the injustice that happened in the last 30 years. I think the prime minister is full aware that the price of peace is to accommodate all the Sudanese who worked hard, actually, for changing the previous regime that was built on radicalism and racial discrimination and injustice and inequality that was imposed with many factors that the NCAS and NCP regime adopted. They are like the rest of the political movement that work together in forming the forces of freedom and change and the revolutionary front and work to restore peace and stability in Sudan. What I actually question is the rationale behind this question. All the Sudanese who have actually a real stake in making change in Sudan are equally responsible and should work for implementing real change in Sudan, in which that we adopt the values of freedom, peace, and justice that our revolution have had as its slogans.
What can you tell us about the appointment of the new foreign minister, Mariam Sadiq al-Mahdi? What does her appointment mean to the government?
Dr. Mariam al-Sadiq is one of the faces of the resistance during the last three decades against the previous regime. And I think she's very capable of representing the foreign policy of this country in the coming period. And again, it also ensures the representation of women and how the prime minister values that within his cabinet.
Amjad Farid is the assistant chief of staff to Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. He was speaking with James Batty from the capital, Khartoum. The management of MedBlue, a private laboratory authorized by the South Sudan government to test and issue COVID-free certificates, is threatening to sue iRadio, a Juba-based radio station, for publishing what MedBlue calls defaming and incorrect information about its operation. Last week, iRadio published an online article alleging that MedBlue had issued fake COVID-19 certificates to travelers. The article said Ugandan officials arrested some of the travelers carrying the fake certificate bearing MedBlue's logo. A technical officer at MedBlue denies the allegation and wants iRadio to apologize to avoid legal action. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Last week, iRadio published an article alleging MedBlue issued fake COVID-19 certificates to people planning to travel outside the country. The report also said some COVID-19 certificates had mismatched names. Ugandan officials has arrested some travelers carrying fake certificates bearing the MedBlue logo, according to iRadio. But Philip Kwadjok, a lead technician at MedBlue, denies the allegation. Kwadjok is demanding that iRadio apologize publicly within a week or face legal action.
MedBlue laboratory does not issue fake results nor mismatch names on certificates. We challenge iRadio to provide evidence of their false claims or apologize for publishing deforming information about MedBlue, failure to which we shall take legal action against them.
South Sudan in Focus contacted Kong Palchan, iRadio's station manager, who declined to comment.
We are told not to speak on that because they already issued an arrest warrant. So I will give you our lawyer number so you talk to him.
Lawyer Issa Muzamil, who represents iRadio, says his client is aware MedBlue files a complaint against iRadio at the police station, but says he is still investigating the matter and will comment later.
I first want to ascertain the fact because I was notified of it and I went to the station, but I'm yet to find out some facts about the circumstances which made them issue an arrest warrant. So that once I get that, I can be able to talk to you. But for now, I will be totally talking out of ignorance if I was to tell you something because I haven't got any clue about what transpired.
Kwadjok acknowledged that MedBlue's quality assurance team detected some forged COVID-19 free certificates in the market bearing MedBlue's logo. Kwadjok says MedBlue's management reported the forged certificates to the COVID-19 task force and an investigations are underway. He insists MedBlue's COVID-19 results have foolproof security features that can verify their authenticity worldwide, including a sticker.
A hologram sticker. This is attached to hard copies of the result. It cannot be replicated and can be used to verify that the results are from MedBlue. Barcode. This should always match the code sample tube or the VTM tube and the receipt for payment barcode. QR code. This is internet-based and can be scanned on any smart device to get the soft copy of the certificate that matches the hard copy.
Kwadjok says any mismatched names on certificates is forgery. He says MedBlue samples are collected and tested the same day with a turnaround time of 6 to 8 hours for results. He says MedBlue uses a polymerase chain reaction testing kit, which is recognized and recommended by the World Health Organization, and that all coronavirus positive cases are handed over to the COVID-19 task force on a daily basis.
All results are shared in soft and hard copies with the task force on coronavirus and the Ministry of Health on daily basis since the 4th of December 2020 when we started our operations. Our positive result samples are handed over to the public health laboratory.
Kwadjok assured the public that MedBlue is committed to impeccable customer care and service delivery in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, South Africa puts its mass vaccination on hold. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how is the birth of a child celebrated in your culture?
When we give birth in our culture, they simply take a baby somewhere there inside a house. They gather together as a family. They bring pots of milk. They slaughter goats. So they dance. That's how we easily celebrate.
I understand in a very simple way that when a baby boy is born, it is celebrated for the first 3 days with some local drinks, some local beverages, something of that kind.
They give them cows. Yeah. Once you give birth to a baby, they give him or her cattle. So that's the way how they celebrate it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at South Africa's efforts to combat COVID-19. Worrying news from South Africa, where health experts say the just-arrived shipment of AstraZeneca vaccines against the highly contagious variant that is prevalent in South Africa. That realization means officials intend to put the mass vaccination program, the largest in Africa, on hold before it was to begin. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The AstraZeneca vaccine, the one expected to be used by many African nations, may not work as well on the highly contagious mutation that makes up the bulk of South Africa's infections. Clinical studies in South Africa appear to have found no evidence that this vaccine has full efficacy against the variant, known as 501YV2 or B1351. Dr. Shabir Madi, the top virologist who headed South Africa's original vaccine trials and subsequent studies, explained Sunday night in a webcast.
Currently in South Africa, more than 90% of all new infections that are occurring are a consequence of the B1351 variant, which we know now to be more transmissible and probably also more virulent than the original virus that was circulating. So after having done a final analysis, we realized that unfortunately we were experiencing a problem when it came to the effectiveness of this vaccine.
The AstraZeneca vaccine still appears to work against severe forms of the disease, he said. However, against mild or moderate illness, it falls flat. But as the charming South African idiom goes, this is not a train smash. The nation's top scientists agree this is just another hurdle to overcome. Last week, officials took delivery of 1 million doses of the vaccine. The plan was to inoculate the nation's health workers first, before eventually vaccinating 40 million South Africans. So now what? It's complicated. Health Minister Dr. Zweliem Kiza described the setback as a temporary one and said the government still plans to inoculate health workers as originally planned starting this month. But Barry Shub, chair of South Africa's Ministerial Advisory Committee on Vaccines, has recommended a temporary pause. He noted that scientists are hopeful that a one-dose vaccine, still in development by Johnson & Johnson, might yield better results. The nation's coronavirus task force chief, Dr. Salim Abdul Karim, says there's a middle road.
So you take the existing vaccine to give you immunity against the pre-existing variants, and you take this booster, which would boost it in order to give you protection against the 501YV2 variant. We're also going to see a next generation of vaccines that are intended to actually be much broader. So they will cover you not only against all the current variants, but also what are likely to be future variants. And that we're going to see emerging over time.
According to Dr. Madi, this means there's room at the table for those 1 million doses authorities received last week. Meanwhile, the government is looking at other options as pharmaceutical companies conduct breakneck research to try to find one shot to heal them all. Health Minister Mkhize said South Africa is leaving no stone unturned and is in talks with other manufacturers, including those behind the Russian-developed Sputnik vaccine. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Still on COVID, the World Health Organization's special envoy for COVID-19 says the world needs to have equal access to coronavirus vaccines. Federal health officials are urging states here in the United States not to relax virus-related restrictions that could lead to a wider spread. AP Washington correspondent Shaga Magini reports.
COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are falling nationwide, and as they warn virus variants could threaten the gains, officials worry about governors loosening restrictions on dining out and other activities.
And I would just simply discourage any of those activities. We really need to keep all of the mitigation measures at play here.
CDC Chief Rochelle Walensky, days after Iowa's Republican governor lifted mask and social distancing mandates, despite the state having a relatively high positivity rate and falling to last place in the nation in delivering the vaccine's first dose. The governor's spokesman says the moves are due to a drop in Iowa's virus activity. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And in South Sudan, a church leader has defied orders not to conduct prayers on Sunday. The general overseer of the Sudan Pentecostal Church, Bishop Isaiah Majok Dow, has ignored a recent ban on social gathering, including prayers in churches and mosques. Some churches held prayers on Sunday. Dow says he does not see why churches should be closed when markets, including Konyo Konyo, which is crowded, are still operating. The spokesperson for the National Task Force on COVID-19 says his group will involve the police to enforce COVID-19 guidelines. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Hundreds of worshippers sang as they prayed at Akelroho Pentecostal Church near the Customs Market in Juba. Bishop Isaiah Majok Dow, General Overseer of Sudan Pentecostal Church, says he and other bishops from the Catholic, Episcopal, Pentecostal and Presbyterian churches appealed to the National Task Force on COVID-19 last week, asking them to relax the ban on religious gatherings. Bishop Dow says church leaders asked the COVID-19 Task Force to allow churches to operate at half of their normal capacity while adhering to other COVID-19 guidelines. Bishop Dow says relaxing the ban on religious gatherings will enable church leaders to create more awareness about the pandemic.
We agree with the measures that have been taken, but we are saying that relaxing these measures is part of actually combating COVID-19. Because the churches are a platform. They are a platform for advocating this thing. And really we do think that the main problem is that people have not been obeying these restrictions.
Bishop Dow says people do not wear face masks in public, and that is where the problem lies. After the government first announced a lockdown in April last year, churches continued to operate because, according to Dow, people find hope and strength in church during this pandemic. But he agrees that South Sudanese must take protection action against the virus.
Whether it is a church that is locked down or any place that is locked down, but we don't keep the procedures, we don't obey them, it will be problematic. Okay, like now in the market, if you go to Konya Konya, you will see people are just moving like that. There should be more to enforce. And this, I think, not the work of government alone. It is all our work, and the churches can be a very big part in that.
Bishop Dow says there are several homes with extended families which could pose a risk, but urged the task force to consider the church as a house of worship and allow it to stay open.
Prayer is like inhaling and exhaling. You're like breathing in and breathing out. It is a part of life. Well, of course, you can do that at home. But if 5-6 people come with their mask on and they keep social distance, you cannot say that you cannot do that here. Because even at home, some of our homes have even 15 to 20 people, so we can keep the same measures here.
Bishop Dow says a total lockdown is not necessary. He says the National Task Force should scientifically mark a specific county or market or state so that people know where most infections are coming from and then target those areas for tougher restrictions. Dr. Loy Thoy, the spokesperson for the Minister of Health and for the National Task Force on COVID-19, says he is not aware of an appeal from the bishops. He says National Task Force will shut down all places of social gathering by force if they do not close on their own.
I want people to act responsibly and adhere to the preventive measures as stated clearly by the Ministry of Health and the technical team responsible for dealing with COVID-19 in the country. But if they don't, then definitely people will be forced. We'll have no option but accept to advise advise the National Task Force to bring in the element of law enforcement, even if it means fining people.
As of yesterday, a total of 4,632 people were confirmed COVID-19 positive in South Sudan since the outbreak in the country. There have been 68 documented deaths. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your brief comments about issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Corona by Bobby Wine.
The bad news is that everyone is a potential victim. But the good news is that everyone is a potential solution. Sensitize the masses to sanitize. Keep a social distance and quarantine. Stop!
The coronavirus is sweeping over mankind.
Everybody must be alert. It's a global pandemic we can never take for granted. It's a matter of life we can never take for granted. Discipline and personal hygiene, and make sure you regularly wash your hands. Keep a distance from everyone. Report anything like a symptom. Serious fever is a symptom. Dry cough is a symptom. Walk with tamala is a symptom. Itchy eyes and flu is a symptom.
Everybody
must be alert. It's a global pandemic we can never take for granted. It's a matter of life we can never take for granted.
The coronavirus is sweeping over mankind.
Everybody must be alert. It's a global pandemic we can never take for granted.
Kila
mtu must be alert. It's a matter of life we can never take for granted. Discipline and personal hygiene, and make sure you regularly wash your hands. Keep a distance from everyone. Report anything like a symptom. Serious fever is a symptom. Dry cough is a symptom. Walk with tamala is a symptom. Itchy eyes and flu is a symptom.
The coronavirus is sweeping over mankind.
Everybody must be alert. It's a global pandemic we can never take for granted.
We've been listening to Bobby Wine with the song Corona. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
discipline and personal hygiene, and make sure you regularly wash your hands. Keep a distance from everyone. Report anything like a symptom. Serious fever is a symptom. Dry cough is a symptom. Walk with Tamala is a symptom. Itchy eyes and flu is a symptom.